This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he is every show, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, it is really great to be back with you here doing An Orb. It's been a while since we've done this, and I understand that's because you've been away lending your musical talents and knowledge to Rom, working with him on his new Vic Fontaine cover band, The Waste Extractors.
Wow, it's been really busy, and I've had my work cut out for me, but you know, I'm so glad to be back. I feel like it's a Christmas miracle that we're here, Chris.
as
we record here in December of 2017, it's been a crazy year for us, but man, let's just say that your dulcet tones are so much more pleasing to my ears than what I've been hearing with the Waste Extractors. I don't think they're going to make it as a band, but I'm trying.
Yeah. Makes you wonder if Rom would make a good podcaster. Can you imagine Rom as a podcast host and you're hearing that voice come through your earphones every day?
No, I just feel like he'd hit the mic all the time, you know? And I don't know, I'm not naming any names, but I mean, we've all listened to bunches of podcasts, right? And you know those podcasts where the person's continually hitting their mic, and you kind of want to just continually hit them for hitting their mic. And so I think that's what Rom would be like.
But Rom would be like, sorry.
Every time. He would hit the mic and be, sorry.
Exactly. All right. So why are we talking about Rom? Well, of course, it's because this is an episode about Rom. He's one of the characters that we have not covered in our detailed character profiles, and we thought it was about time to give him his due and talk about what a great character he became over the course of the series. Of course, in the beginning, we do see him in Emissary. He is the pit boss working in Quarks, and he's just that ordinary Ferengi at that point. Quark is the star of the show as the Ferengi, and he has a brother. And Matthew, I guess when I think about Rom and Emissary, maybe his biggest role is not so much Quark's brother, but Nog's father, since Nog getting caught stealing is what allows Sisko to keep Quark on the station, which was very important for the whole concept of what they were going to do with DS9. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, as you were talking, you're like, he's the pit boss. It makes him sound so much more badass than he actually is.
I know, right? Pit boss.
he's not. And what is fascinating about him, especially, you know, at the beginning in Emissary, is he is a classic Ferengi, specifically kind of off the mold of what we saw from TNG, especially later TNG. And yeah. There's no indication, really, that he's going to be different, that he's going to give us anything to, I think, really be excited about watching. You know, he's just this kid's dad, and Quark is the one we're really paying attention to. And so, you know, Rom is just kind of in the background. I think that's one of the things that, you know, we've talked about Deep Space Nine for so many episodes, Chris, and one of the things we always come back to is the fact that these characters surprise us. And I think Rom is one of those characters who has one of the most surprising arcs that we get in the entire series, to go from almost rags to complete riches, as, you know, being Grand Nagus in the end. So, I mean, he has that arc, and it's because of where he's going to go as a character that and what's most interesting is watching Nog and Rom kind of take similar paths. And yet, right, they're still different. They lead them in different directions, but they have similar trajectories, which is kind of away from your classic, you know, Ferengi attitude. You know, Quark's going to still have a lot of that, but Rom is really going to veer away from that pretty quickly. And I think he's one of the people that benefits the most from Starfleet showing up.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when I think about the Ferengi at the beginning of DS9, when we look back now, we think about how they're so into profit, and we see Quark as sort of the model Ferengi. But DS9 really established that. Prior to that, in The Next Generation, the Ferengi, of course, were originally supposed to be a replacement for the Klingons as this big enemy for the Federation, and that didn't work out. But they then became, I know it's hard to take seriously.
It is hard to take seriously.
That's where they were going.
Laser whips and leather and fur is going to take over the Klingons.
But that didn't work. But they were still the sort of devious thorn in the side for a lot of the time, and they became a little bit more playful by the time you get to Menage a Trois, those types of stories. But DS9 really went strongly in this direction with Quark, of the Ferengi being all about profit. So maybe our memory is colored a bit by having watched this story start to finish over and over, about just how Rom embodied the typical Ferengi at the beginning, whereas Quark definitely embodied where they were going with it.
Yeah.
But what I find interesting, though, is that we can call him just another Ferengi, but very quickly, by the 11th episode of the first season, which is the Nagus, he had really already changed quite a lot. That's where, you know, Zek didn't like the fact that Rom was letting Nog go to school, and then Rom stood up for that, and he wanted his son to go to school, and that was, I think, a big turning point in terms of how we were seeing that his way of thinking was going to be different.
No, I think you're absolutely right in saying that. It is interesting to look back in hindsight, because you can see a lot of these things that weren't so obvious if we were, say, just going back in time and watching Emissary again. And I love that they kind of created this strange dynamic for us to be able to watch play out over the series, which, setting up, you know, who knows if they knew right at the beginning, we're going to do a lot with these certain characters. You know, I think they knew that Quark was going to be a main character, but I don't know if they necessarily knew they were going to do a ton with Rom or Nog, but they gave that opportunity by giving them a position next to Quark as his brother and nephew and everything. And what I love is that the way that Deep Space Nine would do that, they would plant seeds, and if they grew and they turned into something, they would use that.
Yeah.
And I think what happened is Max playing Rom became a character that they enjoyed writing for, and turned into something that gave us not just another Ferengi. Like, you know, he would blossom into something different. And so I think that's really interesting.
So here's another thing I want to ask you about. As I was preparing notes for our discussion today, something struck me that, surprisingly, I had never considered before, but there is a parallel between Rom and Benjamin Sisko, in that they are both single fathers living on that station. Now, of course, Ben is single because Jennifer was killed in the Battle of Wolf 359, Rom is single because he's divorced, or more technically, his marriage contract, he got out of it before the expiration date. It's all a business deal for Ferengi, right? But however they got there, they're both there on the station, and they're both single fathers. They have boys of about the same age, and their sons become close friends. So when you look at that, do you think that there is an influence from Sisko that helped Rom evolve as a character? And likewise, do you think Rom's situation as a single father might have made it easier for Sisko to associate with him, even though he's a Ferengi and they're from very different cultures?
I think it does happen, but I think it happens through the relationship of the sons, and that those sons come back with kind of differing opinions from their parents, and those sons and a rub off on their fathers and change their perspective. And so it makes the relationship between Nog and Jake really important, because I think it does really soften Sisko's heart towards the Ferengi. And I think it does the same thing for Rom. Rom, I think, begins to see the ways in which these Federation types actually are different than most Ferengi to kind of think of them. And he's seeing that through the impact they're having on his son. And, you know, Nog really begins to blossom. He becomes somebody who's really smart. He can do well in school. He starts to have these opportunities open up for him. And that kind of acceptance by Jake opens up all these doors for his son. And I think vicariously that begins to open doors for Rom in his own mind about maybe making different choices, maybe pursuing goals that aren't just about profit, you know. And then on the other side, I think it really does change Sisko's perspective on the Ferengi, in the sense that they could be different, because he sees that happen in Nog, and he ends up supporting him with his, you know, going to Starfleet Academy. And the fact that I think Rom begins to prove himself in different areas on the station too. Yeah. And so I don't know. It would have been interesting if they had made that connection on the show and made it a little more explicit. But I do think that there is a tangential link between those two, and it's their sons. And so they do have an impact on each other, but it's not directly, it's indirectly.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I don't think it's something that the writers were going for, which is probably why I've never thought about it until now, after all these years and all these times I watched the show. But it is very interesting to see that parallel. And also interesting is the fact that Nog and Jake become such close friends, and then they're growing up together on the station, and Jake is the son of a Starfleet captain, and Nog is a Ferengi, the son of someone who was just working in this casino and then was working in waste extraction, and then he gets to be part of the engineering team. But it's Jake who doesn't want to be part of Starfleet, and it's Nog who wants to be part of Starfleet. It's the opposite of what you would expect. And I think for Nog, a lot of it maybe it's not so much Jake rubbing off on Nog as much as it's Sisko rubbing off on Nog. Somehow, Nog really looked up to Sisko, I believe. And maybe, again, it's the inspiration. Like you're saying, Rom gets inspiration from watching these Starfleet types and from watching Sisko and watching O'Brien and seeing how people handle themselves. And he starts wanting to strive to be more. And I think that Nog and Rom kind of move in lockstep in that way. And it allows Nog to have a lot more respect for his father because of things that are rubbing off a bit from Ben Sisko, from Jake Sisko, and others in Starfleet.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that's just kind of talking about that really leads to the fact that Rom begins to change because of the surroundings that he's in, and as the station changes over from, you know, Cardassians to Starfleet, and then, of course, Bajorans, Rom really does begin to pick up a lot of, I think, the ideals that he sees around him that aren't Ferengi. and a more traditional morality sense that we kind of would maybe hold to. And he gets those from those around him. But really, that's because I think he finds himself much more comfortable in that milieu than he did with being a Ferengi and the traditional Ferengi right. values. And it really does begin to have an impact on him and his son. And that's where they really start that trend of moving away towards the kind of traditional Ferengi-ness to something that it's not like they completely give up everything Ferengi, you know, but they find a way to encompass something more than just traditional Ferengi values.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't completely give it up because when Ishka gets caught making profit, he helps her stash away 2/3 of the profit and she gives back 1/3 of it. And that's Rom helping her. So he's not devoid of Ferengi characteristics and he's not afraid to make profit, but he's not driven by profit in the way that Quark is driven
by
profit.
Right.
Well, let's talk about relationships a little bit more. So he moved on from working with Quark after he organized the union and bar association. He went on and joined O'Brien's team. And initially he was working in waste extraction and then he got to move on and do other roles like working in diagnostics, being a repair technician, junior grade. Do they have a special badge for that?
Yeah, it's very colorful, you know, and it says junior real and really, you know, cutesy font. Yeah. So
yeah, JR period, right? Yeah, all lowercase.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then he was a maintenance engineer, first class after that. And a lot of that's possible because O'Brien trusted him and took him under his wing. So what are your thoughts on that relationship?
You know, I think that's one of the relationships that's most interesting. And, you know, don't take this the wrong way, but I think O'Brien and Rom have a lot in common in the sense that I was thinking about this and this idea that they're both kind of blue collar guys in the end, and they kind of relate on that level. But they're also people who are techies. You know, they think in engineering terms, and that's what they're really best at. And so I feel as though O'Brien really is one of the characters who kind of opens up this idea for Rom of that there's a different type of life. And I honestly think O'Brien is kind of the character that Rom probably looks the most up to on the station.
I think so, and would
want to be like, if there's somebody that Rom's like, oh, I wish I could be like somebody when I grow up, it would be O'Brien.
Yeah, I agree. Because the fact that O'Brien's not an officer, for one thing, you know, O'Brien maybe followed a somewhat similar path of Rom, which he just wants to do this work. This is what he loves. He's not so concerned, like the way that Rom is not so concerned with profit and the traditional Ferengi path. O'Brien's also not concerned with becoming an officer and following the traditional Starfleet path. He wants to be part of what's going on, but he kind of wants to do it on his own terms.
Yeah. No, I think it's a really fun relationship to watch when you kind of like rewatch the series, is to see them grow closer and how they kind of interact. But I do always feel like that's the person that, you know, Rom kind of like, I want to become more like O'Brien. What would O'Brien do?
What would O'Brien do? Don't we all ask ourselves that? Every time I have a computer or something that doesn't work, I think, what would O'Brien do? And then I kick it.
Yeah, there you go.
And then it starts working.
It works perfectly every time.
All right. And Quark, of course, we have to talk about. Quark's interesting because he really, I mean, they have that big brother, little brother dynamic, right? Where Quark is kind of picking on him a lot. He is disrespectful to him a lot, but you know that he actually loves Rom. And even as he pushes Rom to the side very often and even belittles him at times, when Rom is truly in trouble, Quark always comes through for his brother. What do you think it is about the relate? And when you think about Quark too, you have to go all the way back. You know, the backstory of Rom is that the kids picked on him on Ferenginar for having smaller than average lobes, and Cork in particularly picked on him for that, and Cork would tell people that Rom was adopted because he didn't want people to think Rom was part of the family. So this has been going on since childhood for them, but they've stuck together and they do take care of each other. So from what we see on the screen anyway, what is it about that relationship that you think helped Rom go from just another Ferengi in the beginning to, in a sense, well, he's not the savior of the Alpha Quadrant, but he played a very important role in the war.
Yeah.
And then he became the Grand Nagus.
You know, I think the weird thing about Quark and what he does for Rom is that he gives this begrudging, unending love for his brother, right? He always makes fun of him and berates him in front of every other person, but really deep down, he loves his brother. And in the end, yeah, he was willing to sacrifice for his brother, and he shows that kind of over and over again, even though on the outside, he's portraying somebody who treats his brother like dirt. And it's a very strange... only on Ferenginar would we say that these two love each other, because it doesn't seem like that to us.
Do you think so?
You know?
But do you think so? Like, I don't know. I think there are relationships in our own world where siblings will act that way towards each other, but when push comes to shove, they're always there for each other.
Yeah.
You like know, some people just have trouble showing
that's
love.
True.
Some people have trouble admitting to themselves that they love even their siblings, and certainly have trouble expressing it. Mm-hmm. Like they maybe somehow feel that it shows a weakness to express the fact that they care about someone like that.
No, I think you're right. I think on Ferenginar, I'll put it a different way, that can be more of a virtue than we might call it, you know? Because we wouldn't necessarily think of it that way. But for them, that's kind of the way it works. And I think that Quark loves his brother no matter what. Even though he thinks his brother's made really dumb choices, obviously he, you know, made the dumb choice by, you know, getting in a marriage contract and having all his money taken. But Quark is always there to pick up after his brother and to help his brother. And, you know, I think that might actually even go back to what the brothers saw from their mother with their father, who their father didn't have the lobes for business. But I don't feel like they ever saw their mother mistreat their father and berate him and never take care of him. So I feel like they had probably a pretty good family dynamic, and Quark's kind of picked that up. He's more begrudging about it, and he's more vocal about it on the outside, but on the inside, he's kind of a soft teddy bear who, you know, he's going to take care of his brother, and he's going to stick up for his brother. And I think that actually, strangely enough, gives Rom the safety net to be able to try something new.
Yeah.
In a really strange way.
Quark has an image to maintain,
yes,
too, right?
Yes.
So he can't let people know that he actually is a little bit soft and loves his brother in that way. Leda's another one. Now, this really, I think, probably caught all viewers off guard during first run. I certainly didn't see it coming. But what do you think it is that brought Rom and Leda together?
You know, I think the thing that brings them together is that she sees in him something he can't always see, and she helps bring it out of him. She kind of makes mm-hmm. the best version of Rom come out, which, you know, if you're in any kind of romantic relationship, having somebody with you who makes you the best version of yourself is a really good thing. So I think that what happened with the bar and creating the union really showed her that Rom has some cojones she didn't know about. Mm-hmm. And that's attractive to her. Somebody who's going to stand up for himself. But also Rom, in the end, obviously kind of has a heart of gold. You know, he's a guy who just wants to take care of people. He really likes people. And that's kind of who Leda is too. And so they're really kind of kindred spirits in a lot of ways. And I think they recognize that. You know, she just keeps waiting for Rom to make his move, and it just takes them for him forever to do so. So, yeah. I think it was a, when you think back on it, it makes so much sense, but it is kind of like, oh, wow, that's, you were, I didn't see that one coming.
Would Rom had turned out to be the same character at the end if Lita hadn't come along, if they hadn't gotten together?
Oh, that's, I mean, a good
does
question.
She really play that big of a role in influencing him?
I do think that that's a great point, and I think you might be onto something, because does Rom have the guts to completely move away from the bar, to move away from that whole life and into the Bajoran mm-hmm. service without her being there? I don't know. You know, does she help him okay. have, does she give him a sense of worth that allows him to say, you know what, if I can get her, I could go do something else, you know? And again, yeah. I think we're speculating just a little bit because I don't know if it's quite in the show, but it's not a hard speculation to see that you got the what everybody kind of considers on Deep Space Nine, the babe, right? Like, and the one that everybody wants, but she's mm-hmm. mine. And doesn't that give you a new sense of like purpose and self-worth and all that when somebody like that's at your side because they chose to be at your side because they chose you? And that gives yeah. you the ability to say, well, maybe I can make some different choices for myself as well.
Okay. That's interesting, because this is another topic I haven't really thought much about in the past, and my
Oh, you can tell I've thought a lot about Chase Masterson. I'm just kidding.
I know. And Ezri too, right? Lita and Ezri.
Why would you discriminate? That's just, yeah.
So I hadn't thought much about it, and my initial thought when I posed the question was that Lita probably has minimal impact on Rom's character development. I could see Rom ending up in the same place without her, because I think that the influence of Sisko and O'Brien and Nog and even Quark probably play a bigger role. But now that you say that, I don't think it really matters if she's the girl on the station that everyone wants. I think it's just the fact that she's someone who Rom wanted but was too afraid to make a move, too afraid to do anything. And then when he finally did and it finally came together and he realized that I shouldn't have been so afraid all this time, I should have just told her how I feel, or in the case of moving off into engineering or becoming part of the Bajoran staff or whatever he wants to do, or the idea, you know, having the courage to explain the concept of the replicating minds and not mm-hmm. worrying about someone not taking him seriously. The fact that he had this success in his life probably did give him the courage and the confidence to take all of those other steps along the way. So
you know
maybe,
why that
maybe
is,
there is
Chris?
More to it.
And it comes back to singing. It's because love lifts us up where we belong, where the eagles fly. That's why. I mean, love lifted okay. Rom up where he belonged with Lita, and it gave him the wings to be able to, you know, fly.
All right. So you're saying that Lita's love for Rom lifted them up into Odo's quarters, because that's where the eagles fly when Odo is practicing his shapeshifting.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is Tirithian a whole
bats,
new DS9.
You know, so, yeah.
Yeah. This is a whole new DS9 that I had never considered before.
Absolutely.
Matthew. All right. Let's talk about one more character, and that's his mother, Ishka, or Mugi. And the role that she played in his life, because she always saw something in him that the others didn't. And she knew that he didn't have the lobes for business, just like his father didn't have the lobes for business. But she nurtured him along the way. She supported him. When they reached the age of ascension, Quark left immediately to go make his fortune, but Rom stayed behind. He still stayed there for another decade past that, which is unusual for Ferengi, but his mother supported him all this time. And he obviously had a special connection with his mother. I was going to say a connection that Quark didn't have, but I think maybe they both had it. But just like Quark doesn't want to admit that he loves Rom, Quark also doesn't want to admit that he's so close to his mother, whereas Rom is more supportive of her. So in terms of influence of a character in a relationship on Rom, how do you see Ishka?
I think that she plants the seed for him to be a different type of Ferengi. And she doesn't really try to change Rom to be the traditional Ferengi. She allows him to be the type of Ferengi he's going to be, which turns out to be the new Ferengi. And so he's going to lead in, you know, the Ferengi Reformation. And that's all because she loves him for who he is, not who she wants him to be. And I think, you know, again, that's a really powerful thing to have that happen. And, you know, as much as Quark berates his brother for not being what he thinks he should be, he's not all that pushy for Rom to do something different, right? So I think they each play this very interesting role in nurturing who Rom is in their own way to allow him to get to the point where we'd hand him off the Grand Nagus staff, because he's going to usher in a completely new Ferenginar, because Ferenginar needs to change. And it needs to change the same way that Rom changed. And so really the arc that we're seeing for Rom on Deep Space Nine is the same arc that we're actually going to see for the Ferengi as a whole because of Rom. So that's pretty interesting. We got to see the micro, the microcosm, and now, you know, later on, and obviously it's after Deep Space Nine, but you see the macrocosm because of him.
Yeah. Well, let's jump ahead on our outline then to something that ties into that. So she sees that in him, and he becomes the new Ferengi. And I wonder if Ishka was nurturing him along the way, knowing that there are these aspects of Ferengi society that she would like to see change. And in Quark, she saw someone who's just adhering to the status quo in Ferengi society. But in Nog, there was someone who thought a little bit different. As I said earlier, he hasn't given up on Prophet. He's not going to betray all the ideals of what it means to be a Ferengi, but he's going to think forward. He's a progressive Ferengi. He's going to make Ferengi society better, more modern. I mean, you know, things change over time. You have to be willing to evolve, and it seems that they weren't. Of course, she had no way of knowing that one day she would become the partner of the Grand Nagus and that she would actually have real influence in Ferengi society. So we can't really say that she was nurturing Rom for the role of Grand Nagus all along. But once she did start her relationship with Zek, once she did begin to have influence, at that point, I feel that she was guiding Rom and guiding Zek toward this goal of hers of affecting change in Ferengi society. Rom was kind of the perfect vehicle for her vision of Ferengi society.
That's really interesting, because obviously you're right. You know, she can't know that she's going to meet the Grand Nagus and they're going to be, you know, she's going to be his consort one day. And that's not something she could ever know. But it does seem like that once she has the behind the scenes, you know, string pulling, that she goes a little Ferengi Machiavellian on him and makes things the way that she wants them to be on Ferenginar, because she sees that they probably should change. And Rom happens to be the perfect person to entrust that to, which is interesting because a whole society based on business, and he doesn't know anything about business, is interesting. The validity of that actually really working in a real world, probably not so much.
Probably not. But if he's the Grand Nagus and his mother can help guide things behind the scenes, that would work. Because yeah. Zek was becoming too senile for her to guide him. Plus, he already had his established way of doing things anyway before he decided it'd be a lot better to just hang out by the pool on Ryza. But having Nog there actually gives her power.
Yeah, that's true.
Having Rom yep. there actually gives her power. And so I don't know that he just happens to be the perfect person for that. She was nurturing him all his life with those ideas and those ideals, and was always supportive of him and the fact that he did think differently in the first place.
Yeah, you know, I think him becoming Nagus, one, again, it creates a really interesting arc to go on. But I really do think that it goes back to what I said, you know, whether or not the reality of it would totally work, thematically it works that what Rom has become, we kind of want Ferengi society to become. They're not going to completely throw away everything that it means to be a Ferengi, but there's definitely some things that probably should change. I think that, again, it just creates something that's unique to Deep Space Nine because they're really willing to push the characters and even the different races and species and aliens in ways that we don't expect. And that's the best thing about Deep Space Nine is that not only do we learn more about the galaxy and these different races, but we actually make them dynamic instead of static.
Right. So rewinding on our outline to the point before this, which ties into what we just talked about, what I see in Rom is a character that the writers could use to highlight something that goes on in our own society, I think, and how we can challenge that. And that's the fact that we have this tendency to take certain people and put them in boxes and say, you know, this person should be good at this, so we're going to educate them in this, and we're going to send them down this path of a certain profession or a certain line of study in school, and they might actually be good at something else, but they don't get the opportunity to explore that because society has put them into these boxes. And the extent to which that happens varies from culture to culture. You know, some cultures are more flexible, some cultures are very inflexible. But with Rom at the beginning, he's the typical Ferengi. We've got him in the box that he is always concerned about profit. He's the pit boss in a casino. But he actually is very technically minded. And the crew of the station and the writers writing the story were willing to send him in another direction. And if we keep it in universe, O'Brien, by taking him in as part of the engineering crew and allowing him to climb the ladder. So just to get him in at the beginning, okay, we're going to put you in waste extraction. We're going to give you something to do. It's not going to be glamorous, but you can do it. But he was allowed to continue to climb the ladder within that team. And then at the end, he is the one who comes up with the idea for the replicating mines, which are critical to holding the Dominion forces at bay. And in many situations, even in our own society, someone like that might never get the opportunity to express and share that talent. So what do you think Rom says, his story says, about how we stereotype people in society, but also in Star Trek? I think in past Star Trek, we also, especially with alien cultures, they become very much stereotypes, right? What do we see in Rom here?
Yeah, I mean, if we just say he's a Ferengi and he can only be a Ferengi and do what Ferengis do, I mean, the Alpha Quadrant is lost. I mean, because he's the only one who comes up with this deliciously vicious idea of how to, you know.
I think you called him devilishly smart.
Devilishly smart.
Before yes, we hit record,
and he is that as well. And I think that's the thing that is so fascinating about him is that the way his mind works, like he does kind of think outside the box. He thinks outside the orb. And I really like that about him. And I think, you know, I think what you hit on is so important. Look, we live in a world that we immediately categorize somebody as this, and that means this, and that means that I can therefore treat them as this, especially if I don't like them or if I don't agree with them. And that labeling type of culture hurts us because we don't actually get to know the individual, because the individual is more than just a one label. It's an entire person. And I think that's the thing that Deep Space Nine really shows us the best, is the way in which cultures truly come together is by actually allowing ourselves to get to know somebody from that culture so that we can then make a judgment about that person, not that entire culture. Now, obviously, all cultures kind of have an overarching theme to them or way of being, but that doesn't necessarily mean, and Deep Space Nine shows us dramatically how those conventions get turned on your head when you actually meet somebody from that alien race.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, you know, Deep Space Nine, I think, is absolutely 100% even more prophetic now than it was when it was on the air, because it actually shows us how to create a better society. Is it a utopia? No. But you know what? It's a pretty damn good society.
Yeah. Well, there's never going to be a utopia, right? So if we're going to look at realistic futures for ourselves or in fiction, I think Deep Space Nine presents a much more realistic view of that than what we see in most of the other Star Trek series. And you know, as someone who lives in another culture from the one that I grew up in and have lived in this culture here in Japan now for 2 decades, Rom is interesting to me in seeing how Deep Space Nine does realistically portray how someone from one culture lives in another and becomes part of that culture, how the other culture influences you. So the influence of the human culture, of the Starfleet culture on Rom and how it changes him is how real life works. You would not... Quark actually is perhaps not very realistic. The idea that Quark could live among the Cardassians and then live among humans for all of these years and live among the Bajorans and still just remain so beholden to Ferengi ideals and not change any more than he does is a bit surprising. Although we do see Quark change over the course of the series, as we've talked about before, he does soften up a lot. He keeps a lot of it under the surface. I think internally he probably does change a bit. But with Rom, it's all out there. You just see how he becomes another person once he moves from one culture to another and he allows that influence to really become part of his life.
I think that's a really good point. You know, the only way that you don't change is if you kind of close yourself off to being in relationship with other people, truly. And we see that Quark doesn't do that. But it's interesting, like you said, that he never changed. But on the other side, you see Rom being affected by the people that he's around. But you, and what's interesting is that, look, it's not just the Starfleet. It's not just the other people that become more like Starfleet. Like, the Starfleet people change, too.
Yeah, they do.
You
yeah,
know, and they grow. I mean, gosh, look at the story of Benjamin Sisko, somebody who is very by the book Starfleet kind of guy, turns into a Bajoran demigod believer. Like, that's a huge arc. So, you know, you have these kind of things happening. And I think it's the importance of the way in which we can have positive influence on each other if we open ourselves up to each other. And so, you know, the influences that we get on Rom, I think that if we kind of, like, wrap it all up, I do think that what we see in Rom is the culmination of everything that we've talked about. They've all had an impact, and it's the same way that if you look back on your life, every part of your life and every person that you've met and every experience that you had, every up and every down has formed you into the person that you are now, along with the choices that you've made because of those things. And Rom is somebody who's been through a lot, but he's also made some good, wise choices that have helped him get where he's going to be. And so I think he is actually a character that you can kind of look up to as a role model and say, yeah, you know, maybe I should be more like Rom. And who would have thought you would have said that at the beginning of Deep Space Nine?
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he has the confidence to challenge himself and take the steps that might frighten him. They're definitely out of his comfort zone, but he takes them and becomes a much better and stronger person for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. So, yeah, very interesting character arc, like so many of the characters on Deep Space Nine. But yeah, from Pit Boss and Emissary to Grand Nagus at the end of the series, that was surprising. I mean, him becoming Grand Nagus. On the surface, I think a lot of people think it's really silly that he would become Grand Nagus, and it just seems like a really weird thing to do. But if you really think about it, I think that it actually does make a lot of sense. And The writers made a statement through that.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, I think we've said everything we have to say today about Rom. And it's been great doing an orb again for the first time in a while, Matthew. But Rom and DS9 is not the only thing that we talk about here on Trek FM. So here's a quick look at some other things that we've been discussing on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Warp 5.
Did you know that it's the same planet that they're talking about?
No.
Yeah, so...
Nuh-uh.
It is. No. So it's Krios Prime. Like she also comes from Krios Prime, right? So, and the makeup is the same and everything, right? So, like, that was...
Okay, I did have that. I'm like, okay, the only thing I can see is that they have the same makeup. Mm. That was the only thing. And I was wondering why it was the same, and now I know. Why did I not make that connection? You guys are so smart.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Well, when I was thinking about where do I find peace, I found it so ironic because it seems in opposition to what my fear is. And when I think, gosh, Amy, where am I at peace? It's when I'm alone. And then I was thinking, well, that's stupid because my greatest fear is being alone.
The 602 Club.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to what I was talking about. For the last two films that we've talked about, to say that what I want for Roger Moore is a sense of dignity for the character.
Continuing mission.
Now, on today's show, we have a very special guest who has steered the good ship Enterprise through some perilous adventures, fought off dastardly villains, and wooed the ladies. All in a day's work. He's now vacated the captain's chair by order of Starfleet Command and is now being railroaded in a new career. More about that later. Excuse the puns. Will you please welcome to Continuing Mission, Mr. Vic Mignogna. How you doing, Vic?
That was a very creative narrative you just put together there. I love it. That was quite witty, sir.
Well, that's high praise indeed.
Thank you. Well, it's a pleasure to join you and Zach both. Thanks for having me.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us everywhere that you get your podcasts if you're an Apple user. Be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV. Or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. I know that now, with the latest version of Apple Podcasts, I believe you can actually do that in the app on iOS. So that makes it a lot easier for you to leave that information, which in the past required you to go to the site in iTunes. So please let us know what you think about the show there. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and most third-party apps. You can also stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link. And Matthew, I'm very happy to announce that The Orb is now available in Spotify. Woo-hoo! Along with a lot of our other shows. For a long time, we had The Ready Room in Spotify, then Mission Log was added a while back, and now finally, many, many of our shows are in there, and probably they will all be there pretty soon. So if you happen to be a Spotify fan, there's another avenue for you. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show and what you think about ROM. There are many ways for you to do that. The best place is the Babel Conference. That's our listeners group on Facebook. Most of the hosts are there. Lots of listeners are there. So just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, or type the Babel Conference, if it doesn't come up from that, into the search field on Facebook, and you should find it. If you're not yet a member, you'll need to click join, and we'll let you in. It is a closed group. If you are a member, just look for the post for this episode. You'll see the artwork right there, the Orb 118 about ROM, and all the discussion will be attached right there. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Just choose to send to a show and choose the Orb. And that'll come to both Matthew and me by email. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. That's our main brand page. So Matthew, when you're not busy making Ishka proud, where can people find you?
Oh, gosh, Chris, you could find me here on the network doing the 602 Club or General Geek Show, talking about all the fandoms we love outside of Star Trek, because there are so many. So we have a whole show devoted to that. So check that out. We're having a blast talking about all things geeky. You can also find me over the Nerd Party Network with my good friend John Mills, talking about Star Wars on Aggressive Negotiations, and Owl Post with Drea Kaufman as we talk through each and every chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And then last but not least, I do a show with my friend Courtney, and we kind of do a mission loggy type thing with movies where we talk about the morals, meanings, and messages that you get in film through the lens of faith. So hope you'll check all those out. Now, Chris, I know you're a very busy man about town, but if people wanted to find you, where could they look you up?
Well, these days, I'm trying to podcast a little bit more. Of course, as anyone listening to The Orb knows, it's quite difficult for us to record The Orb, although we're working on that. The Ready Room has also been difficult for me to record because of my schedule. It's difficult for me to coordinate with people in the U.S. However, with the premiere of Discovery, I have been doing a sub-show on The Edge, which is our Star Trek Discovery podcast. My show comes out on the weekends, either on Saturday or Sunday, and it's called Notes from The Edge. And on that show, I share my thoughts on the most recent episode of Discovery, but I also primarily look for connections between Discovery and the broader Star Trek franchise, and that includes both what we've seen on screen as well as what we've read in the books and in the comics. And I really enjoy doing that. It gives me a chance to refresh my memory on a lot of things, as well as research things that I might not know that much about yet. And the listeners seem to be enjoying it, so I really appreciate that. So if you want to hear that, go and look for The Edge. And within the Edge feed, we have 5 different shows, and mine is Notes from the Edge, so you'll find me there. And of course, you can also find my writing on the official website at StarTrek.com. Have a new piece coming up soon. And if you want to find me on social media, just look me up on Twitter. C. Brian Jones, the letter C, and Brian with a Y is my name there. And that's also my name pretty much everywhere. I'm also in the Babel Conference, and I'm on Facebook, although I'm most active on Twitter, so that's a great place to catch me. Matthew, I'd also like to thank our associate producers here on The Orb. These are the people that help us keep this show and the entire network going. I want to say thank you to Norman C. Lau, William Murray, Kay Elizabeth Shaw, and a new associate producer, James Muldrow. And James, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your last name there, but we really thank you for your support and helping us keep the orb going. And if you would like to become an associate producer of this show or any of our shows, or just pitch in a little bit and help us pay for our very large bandwidth bill every month, you can find out how by going to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. We have perks for you such as early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, of course, I just mentioned, and some artwork and sometimes outtakes and all kinds of other things that we put up there. Plus, we also have the Patrons Roundtable, where you can get on mic with hosts and other listeners and talk Star Trek, and we put that out in the master feed after each Patrons Roundtable. So check out how you can help us cover all the big bills that we get here at Trek FM by going to patreon.com/trekfm, and we really appreciate your support, and we hope you'll join the team.
Well, thank you everyone for joining us, and we shall see you next time as we gaze into the orb.
Recording. All right.
Rom's fancy pants.
Rom's waste management pants.
Oh, I don't know. Chris, no, nobody needs to see those pants.
But he was an expert in that.
O'Brien
trusted him to keep it running for the whole station. So. All right, here we go with the intro.